Chapter 12. A Bullseye on My Back. "What's wrong, baby?" Julia asked, as she lay in bed next to Ross, admiring his jawline. Ross didn't respond to her. He was too busy reading a news article about the Silk Road. He knew there might be a hostile response from the government after the article from Adrian Chen at Gawker, published a couple of days earlier. But this was a far worse response than his imagination had ever come up with. With trepidation, he clicked to play a video in the article he was reading. There, in a small rectangular window, stood Senator Chuck Schumer at a press conference podium, a vexed look on his face. To the senator's right and left, two large, oversized printouts of the Silk Road website rested on display stands. Below him, on the wooden rostrum, the blue, white, and gold insignia of the U.S. Senate was clear for the press corps and Ross to see. "It's a certifiable one-stop shop for illegal drugs that represents the most brazen attempt to peddle drugs online that we have ever seen," Schumer said to a gaggle of press. "It's more brazen than anything else by light years." Oh, heck. This really wasn't good. Sure, Ross wanted recognition and attention, but this was more than he had ever anticipated, especially so early in the life of his drug bazaar. The video cut to a scene of Schumer sitting in front of a computer, Ross's drug site on the screen. The senator's finger traversed the Silk Road as he listed off all of the goodies that were for sale. "Heroin, opium, cannabis, ecstasies, psychedelics, stimulants," Schumer said, briefly showing how out of touch he was with the topic at hand as he made ecstasy plural. The sound of camera flashes burst, pop, 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 as Schumer said in disbelief, "You name it, they have it." Ross felt sick as he read the article that accompanied the news clip, which noted that both Schumer of New York and Joe Manchin, then the junior senator from West Virginia, had asked the Department of Justice and the Drug Enforcement Administration to shut down the Amazon of drugs immediately. Fudge! Friggin' fudge! Ross had picked a fight with the biggest bully on Earth, and the bully was about to punch back. "Look," Ross said, leaning against the back of the bed as he replayed the clip for Julia. "They've painted a bullseye on my back." "Ross," Julia said, petrified as she watched. "This isn't good." The attention of the U.S. Senate was the last thing he needed at this moment. In a month or six, maybe he could handle it, but not now. Over the past few days, since the Gawker article had been published, an unremitting avalanche of press had followed in its wake. Ross's website had transformed from almost invisible to mainstream as it entered the national news cycle with shocking velocity. Established media brands were all over the story. The Atlantic picked it up, NPR talked about it on air, and TV news outlets, including ABC and NBC, produced segments devoted to it. They call it the Amazon of drugs. Not to mention the hundreds of blog posts, discussions on drug forums and social media, and articles on libertarian websites. Despite the mainstream press, most people who read about the site still didn't believe you could actually buy drugs on the internet and have them mailed to your home. This had to be one of those Nigerian email scams, or a place for law enforcement to lure unsuspecting idiots who were going to be swept up in a massive online drug bust. But still, idiots or not, thousands of people downloaded Tor and signed up for the Silk Road to see. It couldn't hurt to look, right? Ross watched with a mixture of dread and delight as his databases filled up and the site slowed down. He barely slept a wink the night after the article was published, lying awake and staring at his laptop or sitting in his ergonomic chair in the bedroom, watching signups from all over the world. The day after the Gawker article, Ross got up, groggy and on edge, and was greeted by a total catastrophe. No, the site hadn't been shut down by law enforcement, or knocked offline by hackers. Nothing like that. It was much worse. While some people had simply come to the Silk Road to window shop, others were actually buying and selling drugs. And every time someone purchased something, some of Ross's bitcoins vanished in the transaction. What the hell is going on? There must be a bug in the code. His personal profits, which were now in the double-digit thousands of dollars, were literally dwindling by hundreds of dollars every few hours. Ross had to figure out how to fix a problem he hadn't even known existed. It was sickening. After digging through his code for hours, trying to find the error, Ross realized he had originally built the Silk Road using a standard piece of code called Bitcoined, which connected his payment system. Now he was discovering that he had created that interface improperly. He just had no idea where the mistake was in his code. All he knew was that he had essentially built a cash register where money fell out of the bottom into the ether whenever he opened it. And right now, as slews of new customers came to the site, that register was opening and closing at a staggering rate. When he did the math, at the speed with which people were buying drugs on the site, the Silk Road was fast approaching insolvency. He would soon be the first person in history to start an underground drug website on the internet, and the first person in history to see it go bankrupt because he had written so much shitty code. Ross had no choice but to start with the problems he could manage. He made the painful decision to shut off new user signups to the Silk Road, which would help the servers handle the onslaught of visitors, albeit slightly. Next up was figuring out why his money was disappearing with every transaction. This would require rewriting programming language he clearly didn't know how to write in the first place. For the next few days, Ross barely slept and ate even less. Julia tried to keep him afloat with his favorite peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but after delivering one to his side, she would come back hours later to see the sandwich sitting untouched next to his laptop. Through it all, anxiety pecked away at his insides. After almost a week of these major issues, after the site had gone down and the senators had declared war on the Silk Road and its founder, the reality of what he was doing and what the consequences were started to settle in. "They're looking for me," Ross said to Julia, in an almost catatonic and exhausted state one evening.
"No shit, they are looking for you," she responded.
She had seen Ross like this before, when he had been caught growing mushrooms months earlier. A strange look of excitement and fear had shown in his face back then, too. Almost as if there were two different people inhabiting Ross's body. One was a timid and sweet boy who truly wanted to help people and make the world a safer place. The other, a recalcitrant rebel who was ready to take on and fight the entire U.S. government. Sweet Ross and Rebel Ross. "Ross, maybe it's time to stop doing this," Julia said to him, after she too had realized the potential consequences. "Maybe this is growing too big and too quickly." But sweet Ross didn't respond. Instead, Rebel Ross was toiling away, trying to figure out the problems with the code that were making his profits on the Silk Road evaporate. Not only was he not going to take Julia's advice to stop working on the site, he was instead going to batten down the hatches so those U.S. senators would never be able to find him.